Welcome to JVL, your place to learn from Japan's venture leaders about the promising startup ecosystem in the land of the rising sun. Hey everyone, I'm Kento, your host for JVL, and today I'm very happy to talk to Niklas Karvonen. Since May 2020, Niklas has been the leading community director of Nordic Innovation House Tokyo, a community platform accelerating the expansion of Nordic ventures in Japan. His international background and his experiences working at startups, advising ecosystem builders, and building bridges between Japan and the Nordics make him a great fit for JVL. By talking to Niklas, I want to better understand his unique story, its relation to Japan, and how he views the dynamic nature of Japan's startup ecosystem. Let's get into it. Hey, Niklas, good to see you again. I really appreciate you for taking the time today to come on JVL as the first guest ever. And welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, Kento.
Cool. So before we get into it, I would just like to give you and the listeners a quick outline of the topics we'll talk about today. So first will be about you, Niklas, and your organization that you represent, namely the Nordic Innovation House Tokyo. The second part will be about your experiences and your views on the Japanese startup ecosystem, since you've been in it for some time now. And the last part is the part where guests get to choose which topic they would like to talk about. And in your case, you proposed the topic of the government's role in promoting the startup ecosystem. I'm also very interested in your views on that. Obviously, you're very close to working with governments, not just in Japan, but also in the Nordics. So I'm sure that you'll have some interesting insights there. Cool. So we'll just start off with the first part about you. And the first question I would have here is, what's your story? What got you to where you are today? And what are kind of the main themes that guided you to be at Nordic Innovation House today?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. I hope I don't give a too long answer to that. Well, I am from Finland, so obviously there is a connection to the Nordics, and I live in Japan, so maybe that's where the Tokyo parts come into play. I studied in Finland something called International Design Business Management, which was an interesting program where business students studied together with engineers and designers. And we were always talking about innovation, about service design, about building new things and prototyping, etc. So I think that was perhaps my first steps into the startup ecosystem and how to build a solution that can tackle real problems. So I found that that's super interesting. And then I was also volunteering at different types of events, such as the Slush, which is a big convention to connect startups and entrepreneurs and investors in Helsinki. And besides that, I was also doing some study abroads in Japan. I guess I was quite interested in what's happening over here. And then I had an opportunity to do an internship towards the end of my studies at the Embassy of Finland, the trade section here in Japan. So I took that, and that was, I guess, about 4 years ago since I've been now living in Japan. So after that internship, I actually had a chance to work for a local startup here in Japan, and I met that founder in Helsinki at Slush. So I always, like to quote the good old Jobs saying of connecting the dots, in the sense it's easy to look back into the things that you do and how they connect to each other. But it's a little bit more difficult to look into the future. But I don't feel too worried about that. But maybe that's just as very briefly how Nordics, Japan, innovation, and then, of course, this particular role, which I took over about 2 years ago, kind of felt like, okay, this is where everything is connected. So applied and fortunately got the job.
And one thing that I was also interested in is, since you're in Japan now and you've been living here for some time, do you feel like Japan made you become a different person than you were before that?
Well, I think the living environment that you surround yourself, it will always have an impact on you in one way or another. And I think it's of course the physical surroundings, the people that you interact with, the organizations, the processes that you go through, because you get different kinds of stimuli, you start thinking about differently. So I would definitely say yes. I think particularly it came quite evident to me when I went to Finland last time in December. So there was a 2-year break in between because of the COVID. So I had not actually left Japan for a long time. And I went back to Helsinki, and that's where I kind of realized that, okay, I have gotten really used to a lot of Japanese things, such as how to network at a business meeting. How do you enter into a conversation that is already ongoing, and how you should introduce yourself and your organization, and how much of sales can you do, and how much you should just be listening and commenting and just all of that. I realized that, okay, if this was in Japan, I would kind of know what to do. But now I have to kind of rethink a lot of things again back in the Nordics. So yeah, it's all these little things, at least little things, but then also probably something on the mindset side as well.
Okay, so I mean, you would say that having experienced both sides, there are some like conflicting ways of how to do business and like how to interact with people in such a setting.
Yeah, definitely. I think in Japan, I think one of the challenges as a foreigner in Japan in the beginning is that there are a lot of processes and there are a lot of norms, and typically a certain situation would have a certain script. It's not always so strict that you have to follow it, but you would maybe know that, okay, first we do this and then we do that. And then at the end we say this and that's it. So there is kind of a process to follow. At the beginning it's very frustrating because you don't know the process, but the more time you spend and the more experience you gather, you start to learn the ropes, so to say, and you can anticipate things to go in a certain way. Whereas perhaps reflecting back to Finland, we may not have so many processes in place, and everything feels a bit more free in a sense. But then when you get used to things being in a certain order, you kind of expect that order abroad as well. And actually that can also feel quite frustrating when there is no order and everything is so free.
Yeah. I mean, one thought that just came to my mind is, since one of the topics that you proposed also for the guest choice part was about how is it possible that there are so many like successful Nordic startups, and connecting that to what you just said about the free nature of having very little structure in comparison to how things work in Japan. Do you think this free nature is one of the reasons why there are more successful and big startups in the Nordics?
Yeah, I think there are many things that are contributing to the success of the Nordic startup ecosystems. And I do think that mindset itself plays an important role, I think. But it has not always been the case. I think we can look back to maybe 10 to 15 years and we didn't have the types of ecosystems that we have. People didn't have the same kind of mindset towards, for example, failure or non-conventional career paths. Whereas nowadays, of course, they're quite celebrated. And let's say you build a company and you fail and you build another one and you fail again. And then you're like, okay, I don't want to be an entrepreneur anymore. Let me go back to work at a larger company, for example. Then in the Nordics, it's quite often the case that the HR professionals who are looking for talent, they will see this as a very positive experience that, and okay, you've learned so many things in the last few years. Whereas in some other countries, getting back to the more, I would say, conventional career path, but different types of organizations, it can be quite difficult if they don't appreciate your time as an entrepreneur. So I think this kind of mindset shift is very important, and that's something that we've seen in the Nordics and maybe growingly so in Japan as well. But the hiring processes here are still quite formulated. And again, it goes, in a sense, back to the process way of thinking. So I think that's one thing. But of course, another reason is that the Nordic countries are quite small. I'm from Finland. We have about 5.5 million people, which is like not even half of the population of Tokyo, I believe. So the domestic markets are very small. And I think our exports in all the Nordic countries hover between 30 to 55% of the GDP. So it is a very important part of our economic wealth as countries per se, whereas in Japan, the role of exports per GDP is much, much lower because of the huge domestic market that you have.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, it sounds like since you have this broad exposure to how things work in the Nordics and how to like, yeah, just the stories of how companies are built there, I assume that this knowledge is like very valuable in your role being the community director of the Nordic Innovation House in Tokyo. Can you tell us about like the main ways how you can use that knowledge currently in your job at the Nordic Innovation House in Tokyo?
Yes. So what we do, maybe I should say a few words about the Nordic Innovation House and what exactly is it that we do. So we support Nordic startups and growth companies with, in our case, their Japan expansion. We do also have houses in Silicon Valley, New York, Singapore, and Hong Kong. And my role is to coordinate the cooperation between what are called trade promotion organizations of the Nordic countries. They're typically associated with their embassies. So that would be Business Finland, Business Sweden, etc. And I would coordinate any types of Nordic collaboration that we want to do. So we just finished this Nordic Health Summit where we had around 50 Nordic companies, 50 Japanese companies, and then we would match them together basically to create meaningful business opportunities. So that's kind of the role as the directors that we do. But of course, having the understanding of what makes a successful startup, but here again, every case is different, every founder is different, every mission is different, etc. So it's hard to kind of create stereotypes, so to say. Kind of having a founder first attitude and bringing that into the organizations that I work with, whether it's the trade promotion organizations or the embassies, or I also work a lot with the local governments in Japan. And just kind of pushing that mindset, because once you have the founders in the middle, then usually things kind of fall into the right places.
Mm-hmm. Okay, nice. And can you also talk about what the biggest priorities of the Nordic Innovation House Tokyo are currently?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for us, our priorities, of course, our mission statement, which is to scale the best of the Nordics and support these companies to hit the ground running, as we say. We operate in markets which have both potential and great ecosystems such as Silicon Valley or New York, but also in markets which can be seen as difficult or challenging to enter, such as in Japan. So we do want to be a kind of a first entrance point to the Nordic companies to navigate the Japanese market. So that's really our mission statement, and that will always be our priority. To put the founders first, but in terms of maybe vectors that we're looking a bit more into, as I mentioned, we did this big health summit. So health, particularly digital health, is something that we're looking into. We're actually facing similar demographic challenges in the Nordics as in Japan in terms of aging population and rising medical costs. So things actually cannot really continue the way they are doing, but particularly because of the COVID-19. A lot of digital health applications came from the Nordics. Some of them grew to be a really big players globally. So we are now introducing those types of technologies in Japan. And another field where Nordics are quite well branded is the area of sustainability and impact related solutions and ESG. So this is also something, particularly on the decarbonizations. We know that Japan has a mission to be decarbonized by 2050. Nordics a little bit earlier than that. So this is also an area where we see a lot of cooperation opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And since you mentioned the challenges that Nordic companies face when they want to expand to Japan, could you maybe elaborate on that a little bit? What are typical challenges that these companies face when they want to capture the Japanese market?
Sure. And I'm not sure if this is only the Nordic companies. In my experience, talking with a lot of acceleration programs, etc., like ours, I think there's a lot of joint challenges that foreign companies face. I mean, the main thing is usually how to find a trustworthy and reliable partner from Japan. It is very important that the first partner that you make is the right one for you. In case there are any problems down the line, it can be very difficult to break that kind of relationship, let alone find a new one, because usually people share information, they talk to each other, etc. So it is very important that the first partner that you find is the right one for you. And we would encourage companies to spend a lot of time in vetting these collaboration partners and not just going with the first one that you might find in one way or another. But one of the reasons why it's so difficult to vet these companies is that there is still quite a limited amount of market information available from Japan in other languages than Japanese. So having that kind of a clear market understanding of what your product market fit is, who are your competitors, what's the business model that would work in Japan, what kind of user experience would the Japanese consumer, for example, expect, etc. So generating that knowledge and understanding is a challenge would require typically organizations either like us or other types of market entry consultants to give you the support, unless you build that culture and knowledge within your company. We see a lot of great cases where, let's say, you have a Nordic startup and they, for one way or another, have been able to secure either a Japanese or maybe a Japanese speaker in the Nordics before they start their expansion strategies or before they even start to look into Japan. And that can be one great way to ensure that they have what it takes to understand the market comprehensively.
Mm-hmm. So you were mentioning the partners. Is there like any pattern? What kind of partners companies typically seek out? Or is that really just dependent on the kind of business that you run? Or like, is it typically governments? I don't know. What kind of partners are these companies seeking?
Yeah, it is always, of course, case by case. And I should also say that I am only looking at startups or maybe I would say rather growth companies within the technology field. So whatever experience that I am sharing is not so much related to, let's say, design, product, import, export type of businesses, because that's, of course, a very different type of model. But usually our companies, they're interested in investors. Having a Japanese investor in your company can be very fruitful because for a couple of reasons, it also makes a potential other type of Japanese partner assured that you are committed to the market because you have a Japanese investor. And also if it's a very hands-on investor, they can also help you in terms of opening doors. So these are some great examples. Maybe they're looking for partnering up or setting up a joint venture with a larger Japanese company. Joint ventures can also be great because you can get the commitment from the Japanese partner side and also the resources. It's not an easy thing to set up, of course not, but that can be one way. And then once they're a little bit more down the line, maybe they have a few clients, the big bottleneck is usually how to find the right talent to work in this kind of a growth stage foreign tech company. It's not like Google or Indeed, you don't have the brand, but you still need that kind of people who can just take it and fly with it. And you can't spend years in training, for example. And you also need to have that kind of cultural understanding of doesn't have to be Nordics as in our case, but some type of exposure to foreign businesses, as well as a deep understanding of the Japanese landscape. So finding that talent is usually quite challenging, and you would need some service providers usually to support you with that.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine how difficult it must be for these companies, especially if they have zero exposure to the Japanese market so far, to even understand who are like big players and who are the people you need to talk to. You don't speak the language, they don't speak your language. So a lot of hurdles that I guess the Nordic Innovation House can help with. And since we already talked a little bit about startups, I think now is a good transition to move on to the next section, which is about the Japanese startup ecosystem in general. Maybe the first question here, is there anything that surprised you about working in that Japanese startup ecosystem so far?
Yeah, thank you. Maybe just to reflect a little bit. So I have worked for a couple of local Japanese startups before this role and also involved in events like Slush Tokyo and different types of hackathons. So maybe I can explore this question from a couple of different angles. For me, and particularly since I took over this position, what has been surprising or what I've been very delighted about is the momentum that we can feel in Japan towards building a successful startup ecosystem. And you can see it on so many different levels, all the way up to the cabinet office and the prime minister visiting different co-working spaces, to different types of research organizations, the amount of money that they're putting into different types of programs. And then if we look at the large corporates, the new types of open innovation programs and how they work with different types of challenge platform providers, for example, all the way to these different types of accelerators that are just popping up left and right. So there is definitely a lot of momentum. There are great people behind these initiatives as well. So I guess surprising, maybe a little bit, that it's really, I don't see anything stopping from this momentum moving forward.
And since you mentioned that you've seen this ecosystem from different angles, being an employee at a startup or working for kind of a more governmental organization like the Nordic Innovation House, House Now, do you feel like there have been like way different images you had about the ecosystem based on the different experiences you had so far?
Not exactly sure how to reflect on that question. Of course, when you start working in a different organization, you build understanding and you build empathy towards those organizations, and you get a wider understanding of why things are done the way they are done. So in order for community folks like myself to do our job well, I do think it's important that we've had that exposure, because if we want to work with academia, we need to know, okay, what is the KPI for this person? What are the worries or concerns that this person might have? Same as, for example, if you work for the embassy, you have different types of worries or concerns, or different types of time spans that you're working. For a startup, maybe you can reach a decision in a week, whereas for another type of entity, you know, the wheels have been put into motion a year ago. So the more you do get exposed to these organizations and work with them, the better you become in trying to find the synergies and the sweet spots, which I think that people who work in community-related roles, that's kind of the main job that they do.
And since you mentioned momentum that is currently building in the ecosystem, one question I would have there is there anything that can be changed or improved to make them the momentum even faster? Or is like everything already put in place and now it's all about execution?
Well, I guess a couple of reflections on that. I think one of the challenges for the Japanese startup ecosystem to bloom to what it could be is, of course, international exposure, both ways, both foreign countries having a solid understanding of what are the strengths in Japan, as well as having, for example, global mentors in Japan who are supporting these Japanese startups who have great, great technology. There are wonderful founders here. There is absolutely nothing in that perspective that is preventing from the ecosystem to become more globally recognized. But it's the access to these, whether it's global accelerators or investors in the related fields that they're working on, or academic institutions. This is definitely something that Japan still needs to work on, to being more connected, whether it's the cluster organizations working together or having more international mentors coming in. But here we are seeing some of the accelerator programs are doing a great job. The Tokyo Metropolitan Government is putting a lot of money and resources, and a lot of white papers are being pushed out there. So there we might just have to kind of wait and see a little bit. At the same time, I guess if I had to say a concern, there is great momentum now. A lot of new things are being built. At the same time, we know that when you do something for the first time, it's likely not going to be the best possible thing. There will be failures ahead. So I hope that kind of attitude towards failure is also something that we've moved forward a little bit, so that we can see that whatever we are putting into motion now, we can still adjust it and we can iterate on it and we can do it again in a different form that fits better the purpose, instead of being like, okay, we tried it, it didn't work, let's close down all the programs. So I think this is what kind of a tipping point that we will see within a year or two or so.
Yeah, I also think that's going to be an interesting question, because I mean, it was interesting that you talked about how countries in the Nordics have like initially a very small market, so that per default, the startups already have to think internationally. And obviously in the European market, you have a lot of interconnectedness between the countries. So it would make an expansion easier in comparison to a country like Japan, where the initial market is already kind of big, and then expanding would take a little bit more effort. So yeah, I mean, let's see where things go. Since you spent a lot of time talking to a lot of different people, and probably most of them will also be very inspiring in terms of their story they have to tell, is there maybe like, out of the people you've met so far, one where you would say, okay, this was the most inspiring person that you met in Japan's startup ecosystem, and why?
Yeah, thank you. I saw this question, but I feel a little bit uncomfortable in putting a certain name out there, just because, and I just reflected a bit on what I said earlier, but really, I mean, all the founders that I meet are amazing, and anyone who takes on that kind of insecurity and willingness to put their life on hold for something that they don't know if it's going to succeed or not. And they're, of course, receiving a lot of questions from people around there. And being an entrepreneur, particularly in Japan, is not the norm, at least not yet. So anyone who takes on that challenge definitely gets my admiration and respect. Yeah.
Good diplomatic answer. All right. And then maybe also reflecting on your time so far, what would you say are like the most memorable moments with the startup ecosystem without getting too emotional?
Thank you. Well, I think the time when I was working myself for a Japanese startup was basically just the two of us every day trying to make things happen and pitching at some of the larger events and Slash Tokyo, for example. It was quite memorable for me. You know, they just basically push you on the stage and you have like these huge lights on you and you see like this huge clock and you see the judges and the audience and you just kind of have to deliver. So I think it is these types of moments and also just the small wins when you hear from a VC back, like, actually, we really liked your presentation. Can you give us more material on this? That's something that I do look back to, and fortunately, the not so good memories they tend to fade away. But it is, of course, quite a roller coaster to be part of a startup.
Okay, sounds nice. Yeah. So then, maybe going on to the next section, the topic you proposed is the government's role in promoting the startup ecosystem. You already touched upon a couple of points where you said that one of the key roles of the Nordic Innovation House is to connect Nordic companies to local governments. I imagine that's also a challenge, but maybe zooming out a little bit first, what's your general thought or perspective on the government's role in promoting a startup ecosystem?
Yeah, thank you. I think the governments can play a very important role, particularly in countries where, let's say, a governmental stamp of approval can open doors and take you to places. And I do think that Japan is one of those, particularly as a foreign company with no market exposure, no brand recognition, don't speak the language, don't understand the culture. The hurdle of interacting with the Japanese partner is actually quite high, unless they are very used to working with foreigners, which more and more is the case. But in these kinds of situations, governmental institutions, whether it's people like us or others, they can play an important role as kind of a bridge builder and making the Japanese partners or other partners assured that, okay, this is a legit company. This is something that we can put our name behind. And this is something that we feel comfortable in promoting towards you, for example. And that value shouldn't be underestimated. I think it is very similar as in any kind of positive introduction that you would get, whether it's a supporter or partner, etc., that you trust in. If you get a warm introduction, it can be quite valuable. And this can also be the case for governmental institutions. I think some other reasons also is that We tend to hear a lot about different kinds of initiatives and projects, particularly the bigger ones, whether it's like super cities or what's going to happen at the World Expo, etc. So these kinds of signals that don't always get communicated online, for example, we can sometimes have access to it, and that can help the companies to plan their future and plan in which countries or which cities should they go in first, for example. And then there's, of course, all the practical, like delegations. If there is a prime minister coming, usually there is also a business delegation with the prime minister, and those can be quite valuable meetings as well, I think. So we have been very welcomed in Japan, and this is also something that I don't take for granted, but I have been so positively surprised how supporting the governments, whether it's city level governments, municipalities, or even higher than that, have been towards us, actually. And they want to know about the Nordics, they want to connect to the Nordics, and they see us as kind of a one-stop center towards the five countries, which we also, of course, want to be. So I've never really had any hurdles communicating with the local governments in Japan from this position.
Okay, that's pretty nice. I mean, is it would you ascribe that mostly to the positive brand image of the Nordics, or are there any other little hacks that you use to get in there?
Definitely, the Nordics are very well branded in Japan. We are known for very positive values, and I think the way we are seeing the world is going in all kinds of places, this kind of country branding will be more and more important, not just for political reasons, but also for businesses. Just as an anecdote, when I was an intern at the Embassy of Finland, we would have our business cards. And in those business cards, we can choose which one of the Moomin characters we want to have in it. Now, I'm not sure, Kenzo, if you are familiar with Moomins, but they are very...
No, I know it. I know it.
Okay.
<Yeah.
laughs> So you can actually choose which of the Moomin characters you want to have in your business card. And that just kind of comes to show how important that soft power also is. Because then you would get into real fun discussions like, oh, why did you choose this one? Like, ah, oh, Moomin, kawaii ne, toka. So it's just one example of how successful country branding can play an important role in network.
What are Moomins anyways? Are they like artificial creatures, or are they like hippos or cats, or what are they?
I guess they are story characters.
Well, sounds like a nice story. It's cool that you had like overwhelmingly positive experiences with the government. I imagine there to be at least some hurdles, but I mean, that's obviously good for you and the Nordic Innovation House if that's not the case. What would be some differences between interactions you would have with governmental institutions in Japan versus in the Nordics?
Well, I guess this reflects a bit on what I started this interview with in terms of having a certain process and protocol. But then if we are now only discussing governmental institutions, then even in the Nordic countries, there is usually a way to go through these kinds of institutions. And I think that plays, I think the big reason for that is that these are very respectful institutions, and they have to, in a sense, protect that process that they have because of the type of work and the type of information that they handle and deliver. So actually, I think it can be quite similar in many ways. But then, of course, if we think about startups in the Nordics, everything is, of course, very flat and very fast, and communications are usually high first name. Whereas then if you talk to larger corporates in Japan, it's a little bit different in how you present yourself. And then it's really the role of organizations like us is to manage the expectations between both parties and just try to smoothen things and communications.
And maybe like aside from these little like communication tweaks, is there any other thing that the Japanese government, in terms of how they interact with startups, can learn from the way Nordic governments interact with their startups?
Well, one great example from the Nordics is regarding procurement opportunities. So, for example, the city of Oslo, which is the capital of Norway, they do a wonderful job in terms of very openly sharing information how the city of Oslo cooperates with startups. They have a very user-friendly website for that. And you can see, like, okay, what kind of innovations they're looking for, how much are they willing to invest, are they willing to buy certain services, what's the timeline, how is the process like. It's very transparent, easy to understand, and it really feels like they are coming towards the startups. But I think this is a really phenomenal example, and I don't think a lot of countries in the world or a lot of cities in the world have that clear process. That is so transparently communicated as well. So I think that's an example that a lot of cities can learn from.
And on the other side, is there anything that Nordic governments can learn from Japanese governments in terms of their interaction with startups?
Well, there is a lot of money, there's a lot of momentum being put in Japan to support the local ecosystems, and I think there's a lot of good governmental initiatives in getting Japanese startups abroad, and there's a lot of support around that. So yeah, if we look at finances, if we look at money, then hopefully we will have more and more countries pushing out similar types of initiatives that what they're doing in Japan.
Maybe one last question would be if you could tell the Prime Minister of Japan, Kishida, one thing about how he should change his way about how he deals with the entrepreneurship ecosystem. Would that be the same as the thing you mentioned before, which Japan can learn from Norway, or is there any other thing you would like to tell the Prime Minister?
Well, I think as I mentioned, it all boils down to the founders and the experiences of the founders. So if you are involved in the startup ecosystem, you have to talk to the founders and different types of founders at different stages and really understand the hurdles that they're going through so that you can actually deliver services that are meeting the needs that they have. So that just doesn't go to Kishida-san, but I think that goes to anyone who is or wants to be involved in supporting these types of companies. Just really build that empathy and understanding, and maybe not try to solve everything. Start from somewhere, and iterate as you go.
Okay, cool. Well, I appreciate the time that you took today, Niklas, especially as the first guest of JVL. I imagine it must have been a little bit weird to participate as the first person at a podcast that has zero track record. So thanks a lot for taking the time. I learned a lot, especially about the government interaction with startups in the Nordics. And I'm looking forward to further chats in the future. And thanks again for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kento.
Thanks for listening to this very first episode of JVL. I personally like this episode because of the nuanced perspective Niklas provides based on his diverse exposure working in government and startups, and doing so in very different parts of the world. To learn more about what Niklas does at the Nordic Innovation House, follow him at Carvone Niklas or the Nordic Innovation House Tokyo at NIH Tokyo on Twitter. If you like this episode, please follow and rate it on whichever podcast platform you're listening from. And for feedback, please reach out to jvl.podcast@gmail.com. That's it. Thanks again, and see you next time.